Welcome to Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal, bringing you fiction, nonfiction, and other readings with a local connection. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interest of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. I'm Joanne Inchin. Today I will be reading From the Summer Club by Hannah McKinnon. And this is episode 5. Darcy wasn't sure what he meant by, "Well, you're not a camp counselor, but you work here too. You must see them around." "I work in the kitchen. Lifeguarding and camp counseling is summer entertainment for them. Their parents probably think it looks good on some Ivy League application. When it comes down to it, they're members, Darcy, like you." He paused. "I'm not." Darcy bit her lip. That part hadn't occurred to her. He wasn't just new. He was on the outside in other ways. "I'm not a member," she admitted. "Sure, my dad is president, but it's a job. And tonight is kind of like working. Adam and I hate it, so I'm actually not much different than you around here." Flick put his feet up and leaned back like he had to think about that. "Maybe." The stars overhead were popping now. The air had cooled, and Darcy could feel the warmth coming off Flick. She wondered what it would be like to lean into. Her father may have been president, but Flick's family clearly had a lot of money, probably more than a lot of the ones who belonged to Mayhaven. But here he was in the kitchen, making their food and waiting on the counselors and guards. "Are those guys a-holes when they come in the restaurant?" Flick shrugged. "They are who they are." Darcy knew exactly who they were. That was high school for you, bullying the popular kids and dying to be invited to sit at their lunch table in the same breath. "It must suck moving your senior year, leaving your friends behind," she said. "It may have been the wine or the late hour, but hearing how Flick felt like he was on the outside hit a little close to home. Do you know Spencer Delancey? He'll be in your class at school." "Oh, we've met," Flick snorted. "Number one." "What?" "His membership number. He made sure to tell me the other day in the dining room when he came in with his friends." "Oh," she realized she hit a nerve. "The other guys can be jerks, but Spencer is actually pretty cool if you get to know him." "Is he? Because that's little I do know of him is clear. He seems like an a-hole." The fresh edge to his tone was sobering. "Whoa, okay. Sorry, if he's your friend, but he's not my people." Flick reached for the bottle from her and took a swig. "Not his people?" Spencer was one of the few people who'd been nice to her that summer, despite how the party at Reagan's had ended. Ashley's behavior wasn't on him. It made her realize she still harbored hope. "You barely know Spencer." "Yeah, I think I do. I'm wondering if you do, though." Darcy slid away from Flick on the cart seat. He'd seemed so cool a minute ago, and here he was judging. "He's the only person who actually got through to my toughest camper this week. She refused to go near the water, and now she's practically swimming. All because of him." Flick laughed. "Okay, sounds like he's got two fans." Darcy's cheeked. Burn. How dare Flick say that? Her feelings about Spencer Delancey were many and complicated, but they were private. She shouldn't have brought him up. She shouldn't have been there with Flick in the first place. "We should get back," she said, turning the key hard in the ignition. The cart rumbled to life, silencing the crickets and the peepers and all the good stuff she's been feeling until a moment ago. She'd misread Flick Creevy. "Already?" Did he sound disappointed? It sounded like it. But she didn't care. She dumped the rest of her wine in the grass and swung the cart around toward the clubhouse. The party would be wrapping up, which meant her parents would be looking for her. She didn't even try to drive quietly around the back. Instead, Darcy blew past the white tent where members lingered over dessert, past the dance floor where she caught a glimpse of her parents dancing, past the teenage crowd, which she scanned quickly, spying some of Spencer's friends, but not him. She slowed long enough to confirm that Ashley was missing too. Perfect. Along the side of the clubhouse, she parked the car roughly and tossed the key in the cup holder. "See you around," she said, trying to sound indifferent. She didn't want Flick to know how burned up she was. "Look, I'm sorry for what I said out there. I shouldn't have dissed your friends." "They're not my friends," she said without thinking. Who cared? It was none of his business anyway. She grabbed the empty wine bottle from the basket. "Well, you seem pretty upset, so the apology still stands." He paused, and she found herself waiting too. "Darcy, I liked talking with you." "Yeah, cool. My folks will be looking for me, so have a good one." She dumped the wine bottle and the recycling bin and strode back out into the twinkling lights and thrum of the jazz band, leaving Flick Creevy standing in the shadows. The whole ride home, Ingrid and Ned unpacked the evening in the front seat like a government debriefing. Moments earlier, they'd been dancing to the band. Now, with the satiety of lobsters and jazz waning, her father was back to review and revenue. "I'll have to get the final numbers from Massimo on Monday, but I think it was a hit. Don't you think it was a hit?" Ingrid nodded dreamily. Such a lovely evening. Her mother, still flushed and fluttery, was still entrenched in the delirious state of having too much wine. At least someone was enjoying the night. Adam glared across the back seat at his sister. "Where were you? You took a car. I thought you didn't golf anymore." Immediately, her father's face filled the rearview mirror. "You took a cart out? God, her parents were so nosy." "Yeah," she said, holding his gaze in the mirror. "The party was really boring, and I was tired of it, so I took a cart." Her father looked like he wanted to say more, but instead looked back at the road. It made her feel even worse. "You were with Flick," Adam whispered. Darcy threw him a look and shook her head. "Yes, Flick," Adam said loud. "Darcy and Flick took the cart." She reached across the seat and pinched his arm. Adam yelped. Her mother spun around. "Wait, you mean the new neighbor?" Was everyone intent on ruining her night? Her father's gaze flashed in the mirror again. "You were with Flick Creevy? My God, for a hot minute, I showed him the course. So what?" "What's there to see in the dark?" her father asked, but Ingrid had other questions. "He's rather cute," she turned to her husband. "You said he's a nice kid, too, right, honey?" "He's not that cute," Darcy said. Or very nice, she thought to herself, as she stared out the window. Why was her father driving so slow? She should never have agreed to ride together to the club. This was pure, unadulterated torture. When they pulled in the driveway, she was the first to exit. "Such a lovely night," Ingrid declared again. But her father was calling after her. "Darcy, I'm happy you went out on the course again, honey. But you need to be careful taking carts at club events. People are always watching." "Oh, believe me, I know," she raced ahead of them through the front door. Up in her room, Darcy slammed the door and checked her phone. There were practically 100 texts from Lily asking about the club party and who was there and if she talked to Spencer. There was another from the camp director reminding everyone about a meeting. And one last text from a number she didn't recognize. She opened it. "Hey, thanks for taking me on your joyride tonight. I had fun, even if you did kidnap me." Darcy's breath caught. How had he gotten her number? Well, it didn't matter. Clearly, Flick might not like the people they worked with at the club, but she didn't have a choice. And she wasn't about to get wrapped up in the opinions of some new kid she barely knew. High school was hard enough already, and they had a whole summer to get through. Her father was always reminding her, "Try to get along with the members. They're kind of like family." "Oh, please," she wanted to tell him. She already had a family. A messy, barely functional, insanely annoying family. If the Birchers were a club, she was pretty darn sure no one would want to join. She decided not to reply to Flick. His comment still stung. Just because she liked Spencer didn't make her some crazed fangirl. Flick Creevy had no clue. Instead, she washed up for bed, weighed herself one last time for the day, and slid between her cool cotton sheets, eyelids already growing heavy. When she drifted to sleep, she had two people on her mind, Spencer Delancey and Flick Creevy. When she woke up around 1 a.m., there was just one. She reached for the phone in the dark. "I had fun," he said. Darcy paused, her thumbs hovering over the glowing keys. Then, before she could change her mind, she texted back, "Same." Saying nothing would probably have put an end to it, but there was something about Flick Creevy, and she didn't want to do that, at least not yet. New chapter, Ned. The scramble proved a roaring success, and nobody, not even Dick Delancey, could deny it. Monday morning, Ned strolled through the clubhouse with a spring in his step. The event had almost sold out, with a record increase of 40% member participation compared to last golf scramble. Well, wait until he reported that to the board. The success wasn't just in the numbers. The evening had been magical. The food decadent, the sky starry, and the guest had danced under the white tent right up until the jazz band bid goodnight. Ned unlocked his office door. At that hour, only he, the pros, and Adam were there. Adam had just started his new job assisting Jane. "Hurry, Dad," he had urged an hour earlier, already waiting for the front door with his lunch packed before Ned even considered breakfast. "I have to review the invoices today, and I can't concentrate when Jane gets that coffee maker going." Apparently, Adam liked coming in early, too. Like father, like son. According to the schedule, Jane had left on his desk. He had a 9 o'clock wedding conference with the Delanceys. Ned groaned inwardly, his good vibes from the weekend already lifting away. Next was the matter of the koi delivery. Unfortunately, a small hurricane off the coast of North Carolina had caused several road closures, so the fish delivery for the new pond would be delayed, which reminded him that he needed to meet with the ground staff. There was some sort of cart damage from a wayward driver on the fifth hole. First, Ned decided he would review the latest comments from the Pilgrim box. He was curious what members had to say about the scramble dinner party. The rustle of paper within was promising, but opening the box always gave Ned pause. Statistically, people who took the time to comment were those who had something to complain about. He took a deep breath and unfolded the first comment. The handwriting was scrawled and difficult to read. "The water bottles on the course are not cold enough." "Not a crisis," Ned thought. He opened another. "Marcy Walgram is a court hog. She always shows up early and plays beyond her allotted time. Marcy needs a talking to. Or is everyone afraid of her?" Ned grimaced. Marcy Walgram was a court hog. He made a note. Next comment. "The menu is too foreign. Is Thai basil? If I wanted mojo pork, I'd get on a plane. This is the United States of America. When did pork chops and mashed potatoes become offensive?" Well, this was likely penned by the same member who'd called their Australian course manager a penal colonist, a bigger issue than the aforementioned menu. There were a couple of doozies. "Is it just me? Are we being infiltrated by swingers? Someone keeps wearing his pineapple tie clip upside down and dances too close. Of course, I wouldn't know such things, but I've heard. What is all this fuss about pineapples? I can't begin to tell you what someone suggested about my pineapple tennis top. It's Lily Pulitzer, not sex. Has anyone considered a Juneteenth celebration? We want everyone to feel included. Where's the color theme for Juneteenth? Is that a rainbow too? Ned rubbed his temples. Thankfully, the next comments were less worrisome. The new showerheads suck. If we can't have a spa on site, can we at least have a massaging showerhead? Can we start a lost and found? My husband forgets his boxers in the locker room. I don't want to trespass in the men's room, but if I have to, signed Lillian Jameson. Yikes, either Lillian did not know the Pilgrim box was anonymous or did not care. Either way, Ned could not risk her trolling the men's locker room. He made another note. He was about to close the box when he spied one more. It was tucked in the corner, folded so small and tight that he'd almost missed it. I used to think Mayhaven was a special place, but the men need to respect the women. Ned sat back in his chair. This was different and concerning. Ned read the comment again. It was written in blue ink and block print. There was no telling who it was from, and there were no specifics that might give him a clue as to how to begin to tackle this. But that wasn't important. What was important was figuring out why a woman was feeling disrespected at Mayhaven. Ned tucked it in his desk drawer. This one necessitated some investigation. Jane buzzed his office line. The Lanceys are here early. They're waiting in the meeting room. Fabulous, Ned said. He heard Jane chuckle before she hung up. They'd already done rock, paper, scissors over who got to run this meeting. Coral and the bride-to-be, Phoebe DeLancey, was seated on an overstuffed pink and white binder labeled Bride in gold calligraphy, resting between them. Now Ned wished Mayhaven could budget for an event planner. Good morning, he said as brightly as he could, but the looks on the woman's faces were anything but. We need to make a little change, Coral said, diving right in. Her bracelets jingled as she whisked the binder open. His thoughts flashed back to the Pilgrim box rumor from last week. Ned tried not to stare at Coral's own, but it was visually impossible. So much glittering gold. How much free time did Dick have? It's just a little change, Phoebe added brightly. Only there was not just one change, nor was it little. For the next 45 minutes, Ned listened in disbelief. He was beginning to suspect that the largest part of his job as president was to manage other people's expectations. Phoebe kept throwing up her hands in despair. I don't feel like the wedding captures my vibe, you know. I used to think I was Ivy Star, but now I want to go for more boho vibe, you know? Ned did not know, nor did he care about Phoebe DeLancey's vibe. All he wanted was for the DeLanceys to stick to a decision. His prospective member's open house was looming. He needed to get out of there. Before he managed to, Phoebe had uprooted the ceremony set up from indoors to outdoors. Timing was pushed back 4 hours to align the champagne toast with the sunset. The 5-course white glove dinner service was abandoned for a rustic New England clam bake. Ned's eyelid twitched as he made copious notes. When Coral raised a finger to suggest releasing doves, not good for the doves or the white tent, Ned explained, he stood. Apology, ladies. I got a tour to give, Coral snipped. We have to circle back to the doves. The problem was, Ned was certain they would. Outside, Ned found a group of prospective members mingling on the patio. Thank God for Jane, who'd overseen setup of lemonade and scones. Welcome, Ned felt a little like a pastor opening his arms to his congregation. But damned if the setting didn't call for it. The sun was high, the sky cloudless, and the distant laughter of campers rippled through the evergreens. I'm Ned Birch, club president, and it's my pleasure to share a slice of Mayhaven with you today. As he launched into the club's history, Ned sized up the group. So far, everyone appeared interested and engaged. There was a man in a business suit, likely on break from work, a few couples of mixed ages, and one young family with toddlers. He was about to commence the tour when he spied a familiar face in the back row. Ned's heart dropped. No, 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 no. What are they doing here? Stan Crenshaw stood at the rear with his wife Josie on his arm. He looked right at Ned, unsmiling. Josie waved enthusiastically. As the group followed Ned across the lawn to the tennis courts, he couldn't take his eyes off Stan's attire. Everyone else was outfitted per dress code. Not Stan. The guy had donned all black from his oversized bowling shirt to his wide black board shirt, shorts, a wash of monochromatic gloom until you get down to his footwear. Neon green Air Jordans. Ned pressed on. Introducing Mayhaven to new members was the best part of his job. As Ned steered them from the courts to the driving range to the lake, his gaze roamed across the group, gauging their reactions. The young mother's face lit up at the sight of the doubles match, and he wondered if he brought back memories of her high school team. Down at the lake, the businessman rolled up his pants and kicked off his dress shoes to sink his toes in the sand. On the upper decks, one of the children leaned out over the railing and pointed to the mountains. "Just imagine the sunsets," the wife whispered dreamily to her husband. Ned was used to these reactions. Prospective members came for the golf or tennis, but they left with the wonder of the great outdoors. Mayhaven had it all. There were sanctuary beneath the willows along the lake, reprieve in the rolling breeze, magic in the shadows. Always, it brought Ned back in time to his own introduction to the club, to the feelings, many and complicated, it unearthed. That long-ago morning, his father brought him up to play before opening hours. Ned experienced awe for the first time. Walking the gilded fairways at sunset tethered him to the splendor of nature. Often they encountered the same young buck beneath the apple tree on the third hole, the noisy geese exiting the pond on the eighth, tromping across the dewy grass beneath the blazing sky. It was like they were the only two people on earth. It was also the first time Ned experienced what it was like to feel inferior. His family could never have afforded to belong to Mayhaven. He understood that the bag of clubs on his shoulder were secondhand, and only because another boy his age had left them behind. Slipping through daybreak shadows, he and his father were not members or guests. They were at the mercy of an old friend's generosity, limited to a handful of hours on stolen Saturday mornings, until the day they were caught. They just finished playing the eighth hole. Ned would have always remembered which one it was. His father had told him to hurry, that they did not have time to play their usual nine and needed to get off the course quickly. They just crested the hill on the way back to the parking lot when they saw Len standing at the edge of the fairway. Len was not alone. Another man was talking to him, arms gesturing. Ned feared it wasn't good. When both men's heads snapped in their direction, he knew in his gut. "Go on," his father said gruffly. "I'll meet you at the car." Ned worried as they parted ways. He worried his father was in trouble, or their friend Len might lose his job. Most of all, he felt guilty for this. He worried this would be the last round at Mayhaven. He glanced over his shoulder more than once as his father walked toward Len and the other man without him. Though Ned couldn't hear what they were saying, the man who seemed angry at Len now seemed angry at his father. Ned knew anger. He felt it emanating off his father all his life. It was the first time he saw his father on the receiving end of it. For some reason, this frightened him even more. He opened the trunk of the car and set his golf bag in the back. When he climbed into the front seat, he tried to wait, like his father had told him. Eyes trained on the three men, he held his breath. He counted to 50, and then, when he couldn't stand it any longer, he got out of the car. "I could have you arrested," the words carried over the wind and the crunch of incoming tires in the parking lot to Ned's ears. He jammed his hands in his pocket and pressed toward them. Do you have any idea what people pay to belong here? This is criminal trespassing. As he drew closer, Ned saw the look on his father's face. Many times in his life, Ned had been afraid of his father, but for the first time, he felt afraid for him. I'm sorry, sir, he was saying. I'll find a way to pay you back. Len is a good man. It was not his idea. When his father saw him, his posture sagged. All three men turned expectantly to Ned. This is the boy, Len said. Honestly, Mr. Kraft, you should see his swing. Mr. Kraft did not look like he wanted to see Ned on his course or any part of his swing. Ned was not sure what his golf swing had to do with any of this. I'm sorry, his father said again. I only wanted my boy to have a chance. Mr. Kraft's eyes had not left Ned's face, and his gaze was so intense it made Ned wince. Go on then, kid. It sounded like a deer. Ned looked at his father, confused. His father nodded. Be a good boy and get your bag. Ned did not understand what was happening. What he did understand was how terribly naive he'd been. It had never occurred to him that what he and his father were doing was wrong, apparently so very wrong. Len was his dad's friend. Len worked here. Until that morning, he felt like the lucky recipient of a generous favor. Ned ran back to the car as fast as his skinny legs could carry him, and hands shaking, retrieved his golf bag from the trunk. What followed on the driving range felt like a test. Ned was being asked to perform, and he understood in his heart that if he failed, things would be worse. But he was so nervous, he could barely keep his fingers still in the grip. Mr. Kraft stood impatiently to the side, arms crossed, as Ned's father handed him a tee and a ball. Go on, Ned. Show Mr. Kraft what you can do. To his knowledge, Ned couldn't do anything special. It had only ever been himself and his father out there. He not watched others play. He not played with others. From what his father told him, Ned did all right, but that was it. It was always ever just all right. Ned took a deep breath and tried to relax his grip. He launched into his backswing and could feel, even before he made contact, that he shanked the ball. The silence that followed was deafening. He bit his lip, afraid to meet his father's eye. Try again. His father handed him another ball. The next drive went about 150 yards, his usual. Len whistled. Mr. Kraft said nothing. The third drive went about the same. The next, 170 yards. How old are you? Ned turned to look Mr. Kraft in the eye. 11, sir. Mr. Kraft looked at Len and shook his head, then at Ned and his father. Walk back to the office with me. A week later, Ned was a member of the May Haven Junior Golf League. He was the first and only player sponsored by the clubhouse, allowing him to practice with the team and compete in tournaments as a club member. It had not been his last day on the course. It was a beginning. When the tour wrapped up, Ned thanked the prospective members for coming, overcome as he often was by their reactions. We can't wait to join, a middle-aged man said, shaking his hand. We've got three kids, and this is exactly what we want for our family. I have to come back with my wife. When she sees that beach, she's never going to want to leave. We're not very good golfers, but we're empty nesters now, and we want to try something new together. When the last prospective member left, Ned was so buoyed up by the tour he found himself heading toward the campers. He wanted to see Darcy. It was a beautiful day. It had been months. He would ask her to stay after work and play with him, just a couple of holes. No big deal. There was no reason for him to believe she would take him up on this, but believe it, he did. He passed a group of campers at the picnic tables by the craft shed. Their hands were covered in finger paint, and Ned stopped to admire the leaf prints they were making. Just beautiful. Over on the courts, Molly was giving a lesson to some middle school campers. Ned was impressed to see the power of their backswings. On his way down to the lake, he glanced over at a putting green where Vince was instructing. One girl in particular stood out. Her confident setup reminded him of Darcy, his heart caught. As he trotted down the dirt trail to the beach, the intoxicating smell of fresh pine and lake water rose to meet him. There, among the campers on the small spit of beach below, he found her. Ned paused. Darcy stood at the edge of the shore all alone. Out in the water, the lifeguards were busy giving swim lessons to a group of splashing youngsters. On a beach, a handful of counselors were talking and laughing, Lily among them. Ned took in all the activity and fun and noise before his eyes traveled back to Darcy, who remained to the side, staring impassively out at the water. All the cheer he carried down the hill with him evaporated. For the first couple of years, Ned's father, Art Birch, accompanied his son to all his tournaments. He'd stand silent among the spectators, but Ned could always sense his presence. Afterward, he'd drive his son home, lauding him with praise when he did well and staring wordlessly at the road when he did not. Eventually, despite the growing winds, his father's attention waned along with his attendance. After 2 years, his father left the family altogether. Ned never saw his father again. He would forever wonder about that morning they were caught on the course. He wondered why his father asked him to show Mr. Kraft his swing. Despite the passage of time, Ned could never silence the burning question. Had his father done it because he saw something special in his son? Or was it nothing more than a handy distraction to get him out of a jam? In the end, the game of golf belonged to Ned, and May Haven remained a memory that stayed with him long after he left for college, moved to Boston, and eventually met Ingrid. For Ned, it was both joy and sorrow. On some days, a touchstone he carried in the palm of his hand like hope. On other days, an old wound whose scabby sometimes edged the curve of his fingernail around. "It's a superb club and a sound career opportunity," he told Ingrid when he'd seen the job listing for head of groundskeeping. But it was more than that. It was the pull of a memory. The long shadow of a boy and his father cresting a hill, the echo of irons in their bags as they walked. It sometimes nourished him and often haunted him, this endless chase of a splendor he lost. But years later, Ned Birch eventually found it again, out there on the course with Darcy. Finally, his heart was made full. Now, standing behind her at the lake, a fresh sense of gloom washed over him. As he gazed upon his daughter's uncertain stance, her narrow arms like bird wings crossed against her chest, Ned found tears springing to his eyes and wondered how he managed to lose that, too. Next chapter, Flick. He lay in bed thinking of all the ways he screwed up with Darcy in the golf cart. Why couldn't he ever keep his thoughts to himself? His mom always said, "People don't like to hear truth. It's like shoving a mirror in their face." Flick had long suspected that had more to do with his mother's personal history with his father, whose name did not mention, so he chalked it up to her own hard feelings, not a universal truth. But now he wondered if it may be she was right. Darcy had ignored his tests after the party, but when he awakened the next day, there was her reply, as golden as the July sun spilling through his curtains. It wasn't the best text. In fact, it was one cryptic word, but there it was. Same. He'd take it. Flick stretched lazily, wondering exactly what she'd meant, before he couldn't ignore the growling of his stomach or the smell of bacon coming from downstairs. He barely knew Darcy Birch. But why did the girl have such an effect on him? Downstairs, his mother was waiting for him at the kitchen island with a huge spread and a suspicious look on her face.
What happened? He asked.
Josie didn't cook. So far, Stan specialized only in grilled meats. There had not been any big breakfast since they moved into his big house, so Flick knew right away that something was up. Josie laughed. Oh, would you relax? We have this gigantic new kitchen, and it's time I started using it. Besides, if we want to entertain more, I need to practice. She elbowed Stan, who was eyeing the plate of bacon. Your mother has a lot of big ideas, Stan said, but he didn't look like he minded. He, too, seemed to be waiting as Flick surveyed the scrambled eggs, cut fruit, and a plate of bacon. Flick reached for a piece. So, we have some news, Josie announced. With the piece of bacon halfway to his lips, Flick's stomach fell. He set the bacon down. God, he hoped they weren't having a baby. He'd given up New York and his best friend, and he moved here to the land of dense forest and even denser rich kids. He could handle all that if he had to, but he did not want to be a big brother. Josie had had him young, but Stan was not young, and being related to someone related to Stan was not something Flick relished. Besides, he was pretty sure Stan would not father an especially attractive child. Flick stared at his mother, unable to speak. We're joining the club, Josie shrieked. She announced this like she's gotten into Harvard or won the lotto, though according to her, she had by marrying Stan. Flick's stomach surged with relief as the image of a half-Stan baby vaporized, then clenched again. Wait, what? Mayhem in, Josie said, as if he didn't know which club. Stan and I went to the open house, and it's everything I hoped for. We're joining. Stan offered what resembled a smile for him. Your mother is going to learn to play tennis, he said. We are going to learn, she corrected. Oh, no, Stan wagged a finger. I golf. My brother's golf. We will be playing golf. Tennis can be your thing, especially if you wear one of those switchy little skirts, right? He planted a wet kiss on her lips, and Josie kissed him back. Flick had to look away. Anyway, we filed our application, and we'll find out soon if we're in. Of course we're in, Stan said, shoving a whole piece of bacon in his mouth. Who wouldn't take us? Flick could think of one person. It had been lost on him that you had to apply to get into Mayhaven. Flick figured anyone with bags of money was a shoo-in. But if that weren't the case, and Mr. Birch was in charge, and Stan had been an a-hole to him, so are you applying to any other clubs? He asked. Maybe they should be looking at this like college applications and widening their search. Josie made a face. Why? Mayhaven is perfect. That's where I want to belong. She pushed the platter of eggs closer to her son. You didn't tell me how gorgeous it is up there. The lake, the hills, the outdoor dining. Best of all, you'll be a member too. Flick really did not care to be a member, not with the likes of Spencer and his crew. He didn't play golf or tennis and had zero interest in rubbing elbows with that bunch of elitist old folks. What he liked was his job. He liked working for Massimo and the kitchen and learning how to cook unique things. He liked watching the campers play and the cute college girls who strolled by in their bikinis and smiled at him when he worked snack shack. But becoming a member? I don't know, he said, shoveling eggs on his plate. I'm not really into that scene. Maybe you guys can join, and I just keep working there. You won't work there if we get in, Josie said like it was already decided. Both Stan and Flick stared at her in disbelief. What? Why can't the kid work there? Yeah, I like my job. It was the only thing the two had united on so far, but Flick would take it. Josie shook her head in exasperation. How would that look? We'll be surrounded by people who send their kids to private schools and have nannies and big jobs in Boston, but our poor kid needs to wash dishes in the back kitchen while we dine on the upper decks. First of all, I don't wash dishes, Flick began. Who cares what people think, Stan interrupted. The kid says he likes his job, and it's good for him to earn some pocket money. He doesn't need pocket money, Josie insisted. He's got us. this was not technically true, and it made Flick uncomfortable. Flick had Josie. She was his parent. Stan was not, and Flick couldn't have Stan thinking he wanted him to be. God, his mother could make such awkward proclamations when she wanted to win an argument. He pushed his plate away. I'm going to be late for work. But wait, Josie said. You don't need to work, honey. The club was a way for you to keep busy and meet new people this summer. Once we're members, you can just enjoy it. She didn't get it. He wasn't exactly making friends at Mayhaven. Again, Stan came to his rescue. Listen to what he's saying, sweet stuff. I think he does enjoy it up there. Right, kid? Stan may have had his own interest in Flick being busy and out of the house more often than not, but Flick decided to give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to quit. Besides, you're not even in yet. Josie's eyes flashed. We will be. Flick decided to capitalize on one thing Josie seemed to care about. Then you don't want me to be late, do you? It might impact what Mr. Birch thinks. At the mention of the neighbor, Stan got fired up. Birch? He just works there. He doesn't get to call all the shots. Well, it's certainly not going to help our chances that you didn't invite them to our party last weekend, Josie reminded him. Flick left them debating by the uneaten breakfast buffet. When he pulled into Mayhaven, he couldn't help but look at it with fresh eyes. Had the lot always been so full of Porsches and Range Rovers? He locked his Chevy, which was a joke. No one here would take it, and he went in. The kitchen was empty, so he checked the assignment board. Ricky wasn't scheduled until noon. Flick had been assigned to the drink cart for the afternoon. He laughed out loud. Driving the drink cart was Wendy's gig, and man, was she territorial about it. He'd once made the mistake of asking Mosimo what it would take to get a shift on the cart. Wendy, in the midst of dicing onions, had looked up from her cutting board. Step off, Junior. If I'm cooped up indoors, I get edgy. She rotated her knife so that the light bounced off its blaze. Flick thought she was joking, but given the look on Ricky's face and Mosimo's swift departure, he knew better. For him to get the drink cart assignment today meant Wendy was either out or state or half dead. The cart didn't go out until noon, but there was a slew of sandwiches to prep and beverages to load. On his way to the fridge, there came a rustling around from the back. Flick startled. In the pantry, he found Adam Birch stacking cans of tomato sauce in military precise rows. He heard that Adam had been hired, but this was the first time they crossed paths. Adam's gaze flickered his way and then back to the shelf. Morning, Flick said. Mid-morning. What? Technically, it's mid-morning, he watched as Adam turned a can left and right until its label was centered. Right. Adam was Darcy's brother and his boss's son. Flick wanted to be friendly. So you're working in the kitchen today? No, I'm working in the pantry. Then I work in the office. There had been whispers about Adam. Wendy had called him special. Ricky had said he was fine to work with as long as you didn't interrupt him, which apparently Flick was doing right now. I'll be at the prep island if you need anything, Flick said, trying to demonstrate camaraderie. Why would I need you? Flick smiled. It was a fair question. When Mosimo came in a little later, Flick had assembled 20 Thai chicken salad sandwiches, 20 ham and Gruyere croissants, and 15 vegetarian wraps for the cart. Good morning, Mosimo called out in his booming voice. Flick noticed that Adam did not correct him on the time of day. Mosimo headed straight for Adam, where Flick overheard him inquire about a delayed shipment of olive oil. Were you able to locate it? Mosimo asked. If it doesn't come in today, I'll have to source elsewhere. The chef sounded distressed. Adam was matter of fact. I called wholesale, and they said it shipped. But when I checked the tracking, it showed it never left the distributor's warehouse, so I called them next. And, Mosimo asked? They said it should be here between 3 and 5. I emailed you the tracking information, and I printed a hard copy. It's on your desk. Excellent. Thank you. When you're done here, I'd like you to check inventory of dry goods. We're running low on flour and rice. Osimo returned to the kitchen and looked at Flick. Something wrong? No. Flick got back to work. Here he was scooping chicken salad while Adam managed shipments, delivery, and inventory. Osimo leaned over his shoulder, inspected his prep work. You forgot tuna.
Tuna?
The older members like their tuna salad. On white, Osimo shouted. Make 10. When Ricky came in, he helped Flick carry the sandwiches downstairs to the storage area. Two industrial refrigerators hum against one wall. Canned and bottled beverages lined the metal shelving racks on the other. The drink cart was parked just outside.
Big day on the cart, Ricky said, sliding the door open. Don't screw it up.
Flick couldn't tell if he were joking or not. Has Wendy shown you the drill before? Rick asked. Then he caught himself and laughed. Of course she hasn't. All right, sports drinks, water, and pre-mixed beverages are stored in that fridge, and sandwiches in the other. Load half of what you made into the cart and come back to restock as needed. He waited while Flick loaded the trays into the refrigerator. When he got to the vegetarian wraps, Flick barked. Do you really sell many of those? Ricky shook his head. This is a country club, man. You've got to learn about their palates. Charges go on member accounts. Your job is to drive the truck and offer service, same as the dining room. Got it. What about the cart? Is it hard to handle? It was much bigger and wider than a golf cart. Ricky shrugged. It's heavy, so go easy and stick to the track. Got it? Flick was suddenly feeling overwhelmed, but he nodded. Good. Ricky slapped him on his back. Smile for the tips, pretty boy. He just finished loading the cart with beverages when he realized he left his phone upstairs. Ricky had warned him to have it on the course for communication. He raced back inside. Halfway up the stairwell, he heard men's voices at the top. I thought we talked about this. He used to work in the kitchen, not in the office. Flick halted on the lower landing where he was out of sight. Yes, Mr. Delancey, he was in the kitchen all morning. He helped me solve a shipping problem, in fact. It was Spencer's father in Mosimo. So, why is he working in the office with Jane right now? Mr. Delancey sounded annoyed. When I went in there, he had his hands all over billing. That kid has no business looking at members' invoices or statements. It's an invasion of privacy. Privacy? Flick could tell Mosimo found this ridiculous. I'm sorry, but Mr. Birch told me Adam could divide his time between the kitchen and the main office.
Mr. Birch is not in charge. He works for the board, Mr. Delancey said. And as chairman of the board, I assure you that we are not running a daycare center.
Adam has a wonderful mind for numbers. Delancey was not having it. That boy has issues. His name is Adam. Excuse me? That boy, his name is Adam. Flick winced. He had to give Mosimo. That guy had balls. Delancey leaned in, and the two men stood toe-to-toe. He stays in the kitchen with you. Is that clear?
Crystal, Mosimo said flatly. Stick to your job in the kitchen, chef, if it's a job you value.
A heavy beat of silence was followed by swift footsteps as Delancey stalked out. Flick waited, then peered up the stairs in time to see Mosimo punch the wall. His fist landed where Delancey had been standing. Out on the course, there was no time to reflect on what he'd just seen. Flick moved steadily along the track, stopping at each hole. Ham and Gruyere croissants flew off the cart, chicken salad coming in second place. Nobody wanted the vegetarian wraps, as predicted. The men wanted the beers, the women wanted water. Tips weren't exactly life-changing, but Flick got his hopes up when he came across Mr. Upton and some clients. Upton was a big deal finance guy in the city, and his drink order ended up being a big deal, too. He eyed the pre-mixed beverages in the cart like he'd step in dog poo. James makes the best bloodies. We like them fresh. James was the club's bartender. All the way back to the clubhouse restaurant, which is exactly where Upton sent Flick.
It'll be worth your while, he said, winking.
Flick turned the cart around, knowing this would throw off his schedule, but eager to please. Driving along the bumpy cart path with a tray of four Bloody Marys proved a near disaster, but he did it. When he proudly handed them over, Upton slipped him two bills. Twenties? Fifties? Wendy bragged she once got four Benjamins from one foursome. Flick waited until Upton turned away before he looked. He was still staring in disbelief at the two singles in his palm when Upton called out, "Better keep moving. I think you're behind schedule." His spirits were low as he approached the next foursome until he spied Bitsy Babcock. Bitsy introduced him around as her delicious pal, and her partners crowded around him. Where did he go to school? Did he have a girlfriend? He made out like a bandit at that hole. By the time he made one sweep of the course, the cart needed restocking. He passed a group of campers on his way back to the clubhouse. Leading them was a girl who worked with Darcy. What was her name? Lily? Darcy had been on his mind since her one-worded text. When he pulled the drink cart up to the clubhouse, he found a member of the Birch family, but it wasn't Darcy. Adam was slumped against the side of the house, his hands covered in his face. Not sure what to do, Flick decided to go about his business. He unloaded the bag of trash he collected and dumped empties into the recycling bin. The crash of the plastic made Adam cover his ears. "Sorry," Flick said. Adam sniffed and wiped his nose. Flick could see he'd been crying. "Are you okay?" he ventured. "Please leave me alone." Adam crossed his arms tight, but his voice was soft. All of a sudden, he looked much younger. Flick remembered Mosimo and Mr. Darcy on the back stairs. He wondered if he should go find Mr. Birch. "I have to restock this cart," Flick said. "But if you need help, I'm here." He started loading fresh sandwiches into the cooler. "You're doing it wrong." Flick turned to see Adam scrutinizing his work. "The sandwiches go in flat, not sideways. You're crushing them. Nobody wants a crushed sandwich." "No," Flick agreed. "Nobody wants that." "Let me," Adam said, coming over. When he looked inside the cooler, he gasped, "What were you thinking?" He began moving every single sandwich. "This is all wrong. Good thing I'm here." Flick tried to hide a smile. "Yeah, good thing." "I like your car," Adam said suddenly. "This isn't my car." "Duh, I meant your car, the Chevy Malibu from 2013.
"That's right."
Flick looked at Adam with surprise. "You just missed the V6 by 1 year. Too bad." Adam made a face. "But 197 horsepower isn't bad." Flick couldn't believe it. "You really do like cars." When Adam had stored the sandwiches to his satisfaction, he turned to Flick. "All fixed now."
"Thanks," Flick said. "You're pretty good at that."
The compliment had the opposite effect. Adam's face crumbled and sprang to his eyes. "I'm really good at a lot of things."
"Adam, what's wrong?"
They both turned to see Darcy rounding the corner. She was carrying a basket full of craft supplies, but seeing Adam's face, she dumped them on the ground and rushed up to her brother.
"What happened?" She turned to Flick. "What did you say to him?"
Flick hopped back. "I didn't say anything. I found him like this." But Darcy wasn't listening. The moment he laid eyes on his sister, Adam's defenses collapsed. Flick ducked out of the way and finished his job as Adam cried to Darcy. It was hard to make up exactly what he was saying, but Flick froze when he heard his name. It was a relief when Darcy finally took Adam inside. What was it with this girl? One minute she was kidnapping him to steal golf carts and lying, and the next she was blaming him for upsetting her brother. He started the cart when he felt a hand on his shoulder. He turned to face Darcy's big green eyes. "Adam told me you were nice to him, that you tried to help." Flick felt himself soften. "He did?" Adam had given no indication he had absorbed anything beyond the sandwich crisis. "Adam can be," she looked off in the distance at a group of campers, "complicated, but he's very sensitive, and he knows a lot more than people give him credit for." "Okay." He was about to share what he'd overheard on the stairs, but caught himself. Things were complicated enough with this girl. Darcy was smart. She'd figured it out. "Thank you for being so nice to him." Flick needed to get back out to the course. The ice was melting in the coolers, and the golfers would be hungry, but he couldn't pull his gaze away just yet. "No problem," he said. "Adam is a good kid." So are you. Before he knew what was happening, Darcy leaned in and kissed him. By the time Flick pressed his hand to her, where her lips had brushed his cheek, she was already jogging back to her campers. New chapter, Darcy. There was no way around it. No matter how she may have felt about Spencer, his father was a total jerk. Normally, Darcy didn't like to be seen in her father's office. She didn't want to be thought of some goody-goody daughter of the president, but Adam needed help. Her father's face fell the moment he looked up and saw both his kids in the doorway. Adam's cheek stained with tears. What on earth? Adam needs a minute, Darcy said, sharing a look that the two of them had rehearsed 1,000 times before. Come in, buddy, her father said, shutting the door behind them. What happened? By then, Adam's crying had slowed, but he did not want to talk. I want to go home. It's time for me to go home. He was fired from the office job, Darcy explained. Fired? His father shook his head. Adam can't have been fired. I just gave him the job. Adam sniffed. Mosimo says I have to stay in the kitchen because Mr. Delancey said so. Darcy glared at her father. It was the third, for one thing for her, to have to suffer a summer job here, but the silver lining had been at least Adam liked his. This must be some kind of misunderstanding, her father said decidedly. So I can go back to the office, Adam sputtered. Wait here first. I'm going to go upstairs and sort this out right now. Darcy exhaled. Their father seemed so sure, his expressions as unruffled as his collared shirt. It always surprised her just how fierce she could be for Adam, a strength she could not seem to muster for herself. You sure? She asked. How she wanted to believe him, standing there in Mayhaven polo shirt with a stupid staring pilgrim emblazoned on his chest. Leave Adam with me and get back to work, he assured her. You have been listening to The Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large braille or print, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Joanne. Thanks for listening.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you a Worcester Regional Transit Authority paratransit rider from Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, or West Boylston? Did you know that you no longer have to call customer service to book your trips? You can now take advantage of our new online reservation system and book your trips online at any time. Call customer service at 508-791-9782. Or email paratransit at thertA.com to set up your online account to begin scheduling your trips. Please note the online reservation system is an additional option for your convenience. You can still call customer service to book your trips.